Okay, we're going to open up the telephones now. Just speaking with Larry Gross, a professor of communications at the Annenberg School of the University of Pennsylvania. He co-chairs the Philadelphia Lesbian and Gay Task Force and is a member of the AIDS Task Force. Also with me, David Weber, legal director for the Advocacy Committee of the Philadelphia AIDS Task Force. Hi, this is Fresh Air. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling because I turned on the radio, I guess it was about 40 minutes ago, and I heard someone talking about proposing legislation that involved, you know, mandatory testing for people. And I heard you engaging with this person, and I was really shocked to find out when that I hadn't heard him introduced, and I was really shocked to find out that this person was a representative of government because he sounded so ignorant and really unintelligent. And I guess my question, besides that comment, would be, are there people who are in the legislature who are sort of more sensitive to this issue and who are advocating the appropriate kinds of positions to counter him? Because I really felt...
Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, well, let me see if David Weber would like to respond to that.
Okay, I'm going to have to take my other call.
Oh, right, I get it.
I'll
okay.
be back in a second.
Go ahead.
Sure. Let me try to respond to that. There are many people, I think, in the legislature who have the right idea about how to handle the issues presented by AIDS. What's going to be in Pennsylvania a big issue is what kind of funding will be available to assist in public education efforts, and that will be coming up again later this spring. So that'll be very important to see how the legislature reacts there, and there are people who are very supportive of taking an approach which is consistent with civil liberties concerns and getting information out to people. Although I have to admit that a lot of the legislators are very negative on this because it's the nature of the legislature to be anti-gay or homophobic, however you want to describe it, and that's really where they're coming from. So that's what underlies a lot of the legislative initiatives that have been taken.
Okay, we'll take another phone call. Hi, this is Fresh Air. You're on the air.
Hi, Terry. I understand the controversy between the civil rights of AIDS sufferers and the protection of society in general. My question is in concern with Representative Letterman's legislation. Is it such a bad thing to prevent people who have AIDS from having babies knowingly, because in the future the cost of the taxpayer and fellow insurance policyholders could be large?
Well, that's a good question, how we're going to deal with that situation. Certainly one of the most fundamental rights is a right involved in child rearing. What I suspect is that looking at it more as a public policy issue than just as a legal issue, the way it will come out is individuals, once they understand what kind of problem there might be for their kids if they have the virus or if they actually have AIDS and have children, that once they understand that, they themselves are going to take some approach other than probably even having children. They may want to adopt children. That's a situation that presents itself in a number of different sort of medical contexts where there is some reason not to have children, and that's going to be up for those individuals to decide. But you know, there's no approach right now that's specifically geared to dealing with AIDS.
Okay, thank you for your call. Hi, this is Fresh Air. You're on the air, and I'll ask you to keep your question or comment brief because we're really short on time.
Okay, first I'd like to comment on Altman's description about San Francisco mobilizing the city resources. And my question is, has the city of Philadelphia responded appropriately to the Gates AIDS crisis in health and welfare issues? Do they feel that? Is that their opinion?
Well, yeah, I think there's been a response. I suspect that there's a lot more that could be done, but I don't think either David or I are the best qualified people to answer that. I think there's more that could be done, and listeners could certainly help by communicating to their city council representatives that they feel that way.
One of Altman's points was that people were well mobilized around volunteer services, but when it came to issues like health insurance and research money and the more political issues behind AIDS, that there wasn't that much work being done.
Well, I think more could be done. I think research isn't a city issue. It's not even a state issue in terms of the funding. I think the concerns are, and here I'd be most worried about the state legislature is precisely on things like insurance regulations and things like that. And the more people communicate to their representatives how they feel this is important, the better off we'll be.
Thank you for your call. Hi, this is Fresh Air. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm calling in regards to a question I'd like to address to Larry Gross.
Good, and I'll ask you to keep your question brief.
Yes. Most of the publications, newsprint media, especially like Newsweek and whatnot, they always demonstrate as far as that primarily white children have the disease. But when you look at the statistics nationally, they're black children. And the public seems to think that only white persons generally get the disease and not blacks.
Yeah, so that's a problem that's very widespread, and it's very important. And I'm glad you asked the question because it needs to be understood here in Philadelphia. The media overall pay attention to white people much more than to anyone else. They pay attention to white men much more than to anyone else. They pay attention to middle-class white men more than anyone else. They can give you a very false image when that comes to problems that affect women or minorities or other groups. And the case of AIDS is a very good case. As far as I know, the statistics on the incidence of AIDS in the country very much parallel the proportion of ethnic and racial groups in the country, which means that in a city like Philadelphia, somewhat more than 40% of the AIDS cases have been among black men rather than among white. Yet the image presented in the media is overwhelmingly white. And from a public health standpoint and from an education standpoint, that is extremely dangerous because it would be false to lead people to a sense that this is a disease that just hits white people, when in fact it's a disease that hits everybody if they come into contact with it.
Okay, thank you for your call. Hi, this is Fresh Air. You're on the air. And I'll ask you to keep your question or comment very brief. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
I've got two questions. The first one is addressed to David Weber. And you talked about the issue of insurance companies screening people for the blood test. I was wondering if they're using a second ELISA blood test or if they're using a Western blot to confirm their assay, or if they were just doing one test and if you're positive, then throwing you out. And the second question was to Larry Gross, and you talked about the number of cases of AIDS patients of both deaths and diagnoses is being very low. But you didn't address the fact that there is a trend of increasing exponential number of cases, which doesn't happen with the other diseases that you mentioned. And how do you feel about that? Will AIDS continue to increase exponentially? And what should we do with it if it does?
David, you want to take the first one?
Sure. The first question about the type of test that's used, it's an important question because the test, if it's going to be used at all, has got to be reliable. We have to know that what it says is correct about the person's being exposed to the virus. The ELISA test you've referred to is a fairly accurate test, although it does give many, in a statistical basis, an unreasonable number of false positives. Though the insurance companies that are using any testing at all, I think that is not widespread, but certainly if they do it, they're going to have to do an initial test, a screening test, and then go through with a confirmatory test so that they're sure what the results are, even if they were going to do the testing at all.
Larry, you want to take the second question?
Well, the second question is one that I don't think anyone can answer at this point, which is what will the future rate of increase in diagnosed cases of AIDS be? It has been increasing, but the increase so far follows the trajectory of most epidemics in terms of exposed populations beginning to manifest symptoms. It's not clear at this point, and I think it'll take a while to find out if that will continue. But as I've read, at least, the discussions in the public health literature, it is very unlikely that that will continue in a kind of open-ended exponential increase because the much greater likelihood is that the majority of people within the risk communities who are going to be exposed have been exposed, and what we're doing is finding the symptoms of usually what's called the opportunistic diseases appearing. I don't think that at this point the public health community is projecting an open-ended exponential increase.
Okay, well, that's all the phone calls we're going to have time for. I'd like to conclude our discussion by asking you briefly this. You both have very specialized fields from which you've been monitoring the AIDS epidemic, and I'd like to ask each of you to address what you think the biggest problem of perception is, misperception or misinformation from your field, and to just single out one thing that you'd like to, from your perspective, set straight. And David Wimmer, let me ask you to start first.
Well, I think the the biggest problem we have in any legal any legal problem that comes up is being able to identify the basic information you need to analyze then the legal issues. So the starting point is that this is an illness which is very difficult to transmit to someone else. It's only under very special unusual special circumstances where that happens. And once you start from that point, questions about quarantine, about problems with coworkers or what have you, those problems, those pseudo problems, begin to disappear. And that way we can take an approach which is a very sound approach to the issues, both in regard to the public health issues and the civil liberties concerns.
Larry Gross?
Well, I think the kind of thing I'm concerned about is that the public understanding of AIDS, of gay people, and of sexuality have a tendency or a danger of running together, so that the situation increases the identification of gays with sex and at the same time increases the identification of sex with disease, and it sort of simultaneously does us two disservices. It does a major disservice to the way in which we as a society understand and deal with a sizable minority. It makes lesbians even more invisible than they are otherwise. It makes gays seen as sexual rather than human beings. And I suspect of even larger concern for the future of the society, it plays into an identification of sex as dangerous, sex as deadly, sex as fatal, that I think is part of a sort of moral reaction that has many, many implications beyond the question of AIDS.
Okay, I want to thank you both very much for being with us. With me has been Larry Gross, a professor of communications at the Annenberg School of Communications, and he's co-chair of the Philadelphia Lesbian and Gay Task Force and a member of the AIDS Task Force. Also with me, David Weber, legal director for the Advocacy Committee of the Philadelphia AIDS Task Force and legal counsel for Philadelphia Lesbian and Gay Task Force. That concludes our two-day series on AIDS, Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome. Yesterday, we discussed the current medical knowledge about AIDS, and today we covered some of the legal, social, and political repercussions of the epidemic. Remember that experts agree that AIDS can't be transmitted through casual contact. On yesterday's show, a panel of experts agreed that AIDS is not spread through saliva or kissing. It can be transmitted through blood-to-blood contact, such as sharing IV drug needles, and it can be spread when infected sperm enters the bloodstream through anal intercourse. It can also be spread through sperm during vaginal intercourse, but that is less likely to happen. One of the recommended safe sex practices is the use of a condom.